Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
All right, let's get things started right away. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. Brian read this tweet out loud. South Carolina kicker Elliott Frey basically said he was excited to play at the real Death Valley this weekend because South Carolina, of course, is going on the road to play LSU instead of playing them at home. It's a tough break. And I put that poll question up on Twitter, twitter.com/1003TheTeam. What would you have said to Elliott Frey yesterday if you were one of his coaches? I'm going to weigh in on that later in this opening segment here. 843-652-3776 is the number. Now, there are a lot of difficulties that the South Carolina football program is going through right now, and certainly having to go on the road to face LSU, one of the tougher venues in the country, not ideal for them right now. Certain members of their coaching staff, houses are flooded right now. Not ideal in the week-to-week grind of preparing your team to face a ranked opponent like LSU. And so I certainly feel bad for them in that regard. But this popped up today, and I saw this on Sports Talk, the show that follows ours from 6 to 8 p.m. I saw this on their website, sportstalksc.com. And honestly, I couldn't believe the quote that I saw from Spurrier, so I went back and I listened to this audio. And John Whittle, who writes for the Big Spur, specifically asked Spurrier whether or not Missouri knew South Carolina's plays. Because this writer, John Whittle, has said that Missouri, he has learned, I'm not sure what his sources are, but he has learned that Missouri knew South Carolina's plays ahead of time. And this is his interaction. This is his back and forth with Steve Spurrier.
Steve, do Missouri have your plays on offense?
Do they have what?
Did they have your plays on offense? Did they know what was coming?
I don't know. Wasn't that hard to figure, was it? it wasn't that hard to figure. But somebody say they did?
Yes, sir.
That's what I figured, yeah. Well, when you only have two run plays and you signal them in with one guy, it probably looked that way. The sweep play, they hit it pretty hard a couple of times. I think we need to look into that. It's a good
point. Do you
have
more run plays or change signals?
A little bit of both. Yeah, a little bit of both. Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that he would kind of shrug and say, well, yeah, I guess it kind of felt like they knew our plays, and then went on to explain how easy it would have been to figure out what they were running because it was basically telegraphed in and you're only running two run plays the entire game, so it's easy for them to tee off on the sweep. I couldn't believe that. I mean, watching it certainly felt like Missouri knew the plays ahead of time, but I just couldn't believe a member of the press would bring that up to Spurrier and he would say, yeah, we'll look into that. In that he would basically agree that what they were running on offense was either so simple that an opposing sort of defensive staff could break it down and know what's coming ahead of time, or they just telegraphed it that much. I mean, I'm at a loss to explain how somebody that has won 228 college football games, and just as recently as 2013 was coaching a top five team that went 11-2, could be in a situation now where they very realistically could go 3-9, 0-8 in the SEC, or 4-8, 1-7 in the SEC if they beat Vanderbilt. And they're just sitting there holding the pieces of a football team and just shrugging and not really having answers. I mean, how are you running stuff that obvious that a journalist can tell you that the other team knows what you're running? I mean, I don't understand what's going on there. And it's really crazy to think that that's where South Carolina is right now. You see him make comments about other things going on in the program. You hear Nick Chubb say that he visited South Carolina twice and didn't meet Steve Spurrier either time. John Hoke was brought in to fix the defense, and he's got the defensive backs playing so far away from opposing receivers that anything inside of 10 yards is a guaranteed completion. I mean, Grayson Lambert looked like Joe Montana against South Carolina, and then he played against Alabama and got benched. He couldn't move the football at all. I mean, 24 of 25 to literally not being able to push the football anywhere. And they went up against a true freshman, and he looked spectacular. I mean, maybe Drew Locke is the next big thing in SEC quarterbacking, or maybe it's the Grayson Lambert effect where they made someone pedestrian look like he was a Pro Bowler. It's remarkable that that's the situation that they're in, and this is the way that I relate it. I have worked in radio sales for the last year and a half in addition to hosting the show, and I will not be working in radio sales as of next week. I really want to focus on making this show better, and I feel like too many times my time is being stretched in opposite directions, and I want to make sure that this show can really take it to the next level. But with my sales job, whether or not I'm having a good month in sales really depends on what I have done the 3 months before then. Because you're not going to make a phone call, walk in the door, and sign somebody to an annual contract right after shaking their hand and then get that money in the door later that week, right? So your month has to do with what you had in the pipeline from previous months and how you work it. And so a lot of times you can be having a successful month, and maybe because the money's coming in and things are good, maybe you're not grinding, right? But then you're going to feel it 3 months from then because of what you had done. And to me, it seems like South Carolina football is caught in that position where they realize that the work that they had done 1 year, 2 years, 3 years ago is inadequate, and now they're getting caught in that bad month, except for that bad month is a year, and that year is going to last for probably longer than a year. Because, I mean, misevaluations in recruiting, allowing subpar members of the staff to stay on, I mean, that's the only way that you can create this situation to the point where in 2013, they had so much NFL talent on that team. Maybe the warning signs of having a not-so-great staff and going about the processes in a way that isn't going to lead to future success, maybe that wasn't abundantly clear when they're going 11-2. And then the next year, you can tell yourself you're close because you blow three fourth-quarter leads that would have made you 10-3 instead of 7-6. You can say that you're close, and then all of a sudden you're caught in the year where you might not win a game in the SEC. But it's because of things that happened 3-4 years ago. I mean, when they're in the midst of that string of beating Clemson five games in a row, it's kind of obvious that Clemson was out-recruiting them and putting together a better assistant coaching staff. So while they were losing those games on the field, they were being better set up for the future. And I just kind of feel like South Carolina is in that jam right now. And I don't know how Ray Tanner addresses this, because Spurrier's done enough to basically, if he wants to, at the end of the year, say, I feel bad about the way that this mess transpired, and I'd really love to fix it. You'd probably like to think that there's enough loyalty in college sports and in that institution, particularly from a gentleman like Ray Tanner, who used to be a coach himself, to say, all right, Steve, you've won over 200 games in college football. You've been successful at three different universities. You won a national championship. If you want to leave on your terms, we'll let you figure this out. But I don't know how he does that, because there's got to be wholesale changes to that staff, because it just seems like there isn't an answer. Like when he's asked a question, did Missouri know your plays? And he shrugs and he's like, it feels like it. And they probably did. We were running two running plays. If they couldn't figure it out, then what's 1 + 1, right? I mean, that's the vibe that you get. It just doesn't seem like there's any answers. Like sometimes when a team's losing a game, losing a bunch of games in a row, you can still have a sense of optimism. But I literally don't know what answer has been put forth for why they're not playing well that will apply to the future. Like I mentioned this time and time again, I went to what I thought was Ron Rivera's like execution, right? In his second year coaching the Carolina Panthers, they start out 2-8. His opening season, they were 6-10. So he's sitting there at the podium, standing there rather, his eyes are bloodshot, 8 wins, 18 losses, and they were 1-7 at the time in games decided by 7 points or less. He looked like a marked man. And he stood up there at that podium and said, I am not changing anything. It doesn't make sense how much we're losing. We're doing everything the right way. We're coaching hard. Our guys are playing hard. It doesn't make sense how many close games we've lost. And the only thing I'm going to do tomorrow is be in this building before 6 a.m. and continue watching film and continue grinding. And he believed in himself. He had conviction. And they ended up turning some of those close games around, and now he's in a position where he's 4-0 after making back-to-back playoff appearances. He's the first coach in the history of the NFC South Division to win back-to-back division titles. But back then, in 2012, that day in the middle of the fall when that man's eyes were bloodshot and he was standing in front of the Charlotte media trying to explain why he had only won 8 of his first 26 football games in the NFL, it didn't look like he was going to be where he is today. And he just doubled down. He said, you know what? I'm going to do more of the same things, and I'm just going to continue to work hard. But I don't get that vibe out of South Carolina. Like, I get the vibe that it's seriously broken. I mean, this is not just blowing a couple of fourth quarter leads. This is looking at a football team and seeing it devoid of NFL talent or any kind of plan to change the program. And I mean, it's just baffling to me that they would be in this position after having so much success in the past. And I don't really know how it changes. Like if you're saying, like, why the South Carolina football program is on good footing for the future, what do you say? Legendary head coach who's won a lot of football games, freshman quarterback who's a good athlete. I don't really know. And it's tough to watch it because, I mean, I want the Gamecocks to succeed because it makes the show more interesting. I mean, when Coastal football is good, when Clemson football is good, when South Carolina football is good, when ACC basketball is good, I mean, those are all of the things I pull for because I pull for the show, man. I mean, I want this thing to be interesting. 843-652-3776. I mean, I'm just interested. Like, what? Like, if you were going to say that South Carolina football is on good footing for the future, like, what would you say? What would your answer to that question be? Because when I hear Spurrier say that Missouri knew their plays ahead of time or kind of agree with a reporter saying that, it really seems like the program and how it does business is broken to a certain extent. Like, I think Nunez having a strong second half of his freshman season and showing some growth in the passing game, I mean, I think that would be one way that you might say that things are heading in the right direction, but aside from that, like, I'm really not sure what you would say. 843-652-3776. JC is getting things started on Sound Off. JC, what do you got for us, my man?
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Doing well, man. What's up?
Let me tell you, there are a lot of things that have happened to South Carolina's football program in the past few years. And there are many reasons why, if you ask me, as a diehard South Carolina fan and alumnus, this is a long-term problem, and South Carolina's football program, unless something major happens, is going to be what it was prior to 2010, which was essentially an also-ran. I hate to say it about my alma mater, but when you look at what's happened, we lost Ellis Johnson, we lost Shane Beamer, we lost Jay Graham, we lost Brad Lawing. Those guys were the heart of our recruiting, and we've replaced them with guys who've done a, pardon my French, but piss-poor job of recruiting in South Carolina and in neighboring states. That falls squarely, in my opinion, on Steve Spurrier for putting his son over recruiting. You look at Clemson, the amount of young talent that's on the field, and their recruiters have done their job, and their player evaluators have done their job. You look at South Carolina, even the four stars that we've got, a lot of them have panned out. And the reason is because, you know, our guys haven't done their job in looking and seeing whether or not these guys are actually four stars. This is it's a problem. And the fact is that we lost a lot in a short period of time, and it was, it was magnified. And, you know, it's to me a problem that's going to take somebody coming in after Steve Spurrier and clearing house. And I hate to say it, but I'm glad for what Spurrier's done when he's here, but it's obvious. You look at the regression from 2013 to now, there needs to be a change, and it needs to be a big one. And I hate to say it, but, you know, I'm as someone who pays money to go see these guys play, they're not worth my money, and they're not worth my time this year. And so that's how I feel. I'm angry, and I want something to be done, or, you know, Ray Tanner's not going to get my money next year.
Yeah, it's such a tough spot to be in, JC, because the staff, it seems to be the problem. And that seems, but at the end of the day, the head coach is responsible for putting a staff together. But the situation where you say, okay, Steve, you're 70, you've got to clean house and get a bunch of new faces in here. I mean, who would want to walk into that situation knowing that they might not be given a realistic shot to turn the program around. Like if you're a hotshot young offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, unless you were flat out being told you're the coach in waiting, I don't know why you would go into Columbia to walk into that situation either. I mean, I don't really see any way out of it.
Well, if you're the defensive coordinator, I think you can use, a lot of guys. I mean, Ellis Johnson used his tenure as South Carolina's defensive coordinator to get a job at Southern Miss. That didn't pan out for him. I think you could sell a good defensive coordinator to come to South Carolina. But, we're never going to have an offensive coordinator so long as Steve Spurrier is our head coach. And his vision or his way is going to be the way that our offense is run. And even if we need to maybe modify our team, some of the play calling, it's not going to happen. I mean, how many times in the past 2 years at South Carolina had a third and one, we've run the football, out of the shotgun two straight times and had a turnover on downs. Those are the little things that people, see and they magnify because last year we were mediocre and this year we're horrible. And so if I'm an offensive coach, I don't know if South Carolina is a destination for me. I still think for the defensive coordinators and coaches it is. But, right now we've got a staff that is, in my opinion, subpar at recruiting and player development. And, if Spurrier's not willing to change it, then he needs to go. And I think he's shown with not getting rid of Lorenzo Ward, he's not willing to change it. And I'll be honest, I think he brought John Hoke in to coach for a year to have a job. I really do. I mean, because, what are we gonna do? I mean, our defense is playing better, I guess, but it's a mess. And I'm frustrated. And lifelong Gamecocks like myself, I know, are frustrated, not only because of our success or our decline, but because of Clemson's parallel success. So, and I don't think that's gonna change. I'll hang up and let you guys further discuss. Have a good one.
Yeah, appreciate the call, JC. JC mentioned Ellis Johnson, Shane Beamer, a number of the changes to the staff years ago that helped build that team that grew from 6 or 7 wins to 11 wins every year. And I think that the replacements in those positions inherited an 11-2 football team and continued that process because the talent was already on the field and weren't able to build from there. So what I agree with a lot of what JC is saying, and it's just, it's a brutal position to be in because when you have to essentially recruit your way out of a situation, it takes a long time. And I don't know if it's 4-star misevaluations or they're getting guys that don't fit. Like Wes Green, 4-star defensive back out of Georgia. He doesn't play a game for South Carolina because of the Spurrier's famous 3 pots, you're done quote, right? Now, you don't know if he actually was a 4-star talent because he didn't see the field for South Carolina. I mean, Shaq Rowland was a 4-star talent, but they couldn't keep him on the field. So it makes you wonder how much of it is, okay, they're taking talented guys that don't fit the system because of cultural issues, or are they getting guys that are 4-star busts, like, Shamir Jeffrey, for instance, a 4-star player that hasn't been able to find the field. I mean, it seems like there's been a combination of both of those things going on, and I don't see the South Carolina Clemson balance from where it is right now changing anytime soon. Got a tweet in. Dean hits us up at 1003. The team, come on, USC hasn't been good at all. How about you talk about a real team that's been good their whole history, Lou? Okay. Well, he's talking about Clemson. Dean's a Clemson fan. They're very good this year. I mean, their offense hasn't clicked yet, and they beat a team like Notre Dame with Deshaun Watson throwing for 99 yards. I mean, if you told me Deshaun Watson throws for 99 yards against Notre Dame, I would have said the Irish win by 10. But that's, that was the criticism of the Clemson program 2 or 3 years ago, that it was the Chad Morris show. They were beating bad teams 40-0, but when they got into a grinded out kind of football game, in which case their front seven had to make plays and they had to run between the tackles, they couldn't win a game like that. They would get out physical by South Carolina and Florida State, and that's not the case anymore. That Clemson program is able to win those kind of games. So if they can click, if they can get to their offense to the point where they can have fireworks again, that has a lot to do with Mike Williams being out, not being able to stretch the field. I think it's going to hurt them a little bit this season. But if they get that offense clicking again, yeah, there's a reason I picked them to go to the playoff this year. It's not because I don't show Clemson enough love. It's just when you're thinking about what makes interesting radio, I think how to fix South Carolina is a very compelling topic. Is Clemson really good or are they great? I mean, that's not the most compelling topic in the world. I mean, if you want to look at Clemson this year, what's really interesting is, okay, what is their biggest obstacle now that they've gotten around Notre Dame at home? I mean, they've got Florida State at home. They've got Georgia Tech this weekend, who's coming off of three consecutive losses. I mean, they've already beat Louisville, even though they're not great this year. Petrino's a good coach. I mean, with this Clemson schedule, there aren't that many roadblocks on it. I mean, what, you're gonna be afraid of Duke or North Carolina coming at you at Bank of America Stadium in the ACC championship game if you beat Florida State? I mean, it's not that I don't have respect for Clemson. It's just I'm trying to find a way to make their program as interesting on the radio. I mean, South Carolina, I mean, that's – what the heck's going on there? I mean, that's – anyways, I don't really feel like I play favorites in terms of coverage. It's just I go with what's interesting. 843-652-3776 is the number. Didn't even get into Elliott Fry's tweet. I'll lead off next segment with that, my thoughts on that. And also Louisville basketball. We talked about those allegations against their program made by a madam – I think I can say the word madam on the radio, and everybody probably knows what that means. It turns out the NCAA talked to one of the former recruits, and some things he said troubling for Louisville. We'll get into that next.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Strong call from JC earlier. Interested, anyone else wants to weigh in on that? Like, if you were trying to say that this is just a blip on the screen for South Carolina football and they're going to be back in the future, what kind of argument would you make? I mean, how would you even begin to say that to somebody? Like, what points would you make? Dean hits us up at 1003 The Team. It's a relapse of the early 2000s Carolina football. I mean, it looks like it's going there. I mean, because the evidence of what it's going to be moving forward, I mean, what you do right now impacts 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the road. And there's just an amazing lack of vision right now. I mean, is it Spurrier calling plays? Is it G.A. Mangus? Is it Sean Elliott? How many plays are they running? You know, I tell you what, another thing that's going on right now, and I don't blame them this year because they're in such a jam at the quarterback position, but you heard that audio in the first segment. We can play it here. This is Spurrier talking to John Whittle of the Big Spur, 247sports.com, about whether or not Missouri knew what plays they were running.
Steve, did Missouri have your plays on offense?
Did they have what?
Did they have your plays on offense? Did they know what was coming?
I don't know. It wasn't that hard to figure, was it? it wasn't that hard to figure. But what, somebody said they did?
Yes.
That's what I figured, yeah. Well, when you only have two run plays and you signal them in with one guy, it probably looked that way. The sweep play, they hit it pretty hard a couple of times. I think we need to look into that. It's a good point.
Do you add more run plays or change signals?
A little bit of both.
So right there, you can't hear that and definitively know, like, okay, is that Missouri knowing their signals, or is it just if you run two run plays, there's a 50% chance you're going to be right? And there's, you know, if you're running between the tackles, you're running a sweep, it's like, oh, it's that one. Is it the lack of depth of the playbook, or is it their signaling is that easy to figure out? There's a difference there, but I guess with when you're only running two run plays, as Spurrier said, then it's easy to figure out. And this is something that's being talked about with professional quarterbacks a lot right now, how poorly rookie, first-year, second-year, third-year quarterbacks have been playing lately, and I talk about this a lot with regard to spread offenses and adapting to professional offenses, which have a lot more depth, different terminology. You have to start, like in Bryce Petty's case, he's a New York Jet. He's never had to read a middle linebacker in coverage before because Baylor receivers are just, like, wide open. Like, nobody's around them for, like, 30 yards. And they're playing so fast, and they've got so much speed, it's not necessary for him to read a middle linebacker. With South Carolina, they're putting a true freshman behind center right now. He doesn't have command of the entire playbook, so they have to keep it simple and run way fewer plays than they would have when they had Connor Shaw in his fourth year. And I do wonder a lot of times, not just with the spreads, but the pressure to win right now and the pressure to play guys immediately, if that's if that's also part of what's impacting quarterback play professionally to the point where guys aren't ready to step into NFL roles and start because they're not seeing very complex offenses at the college level. Like Christian Hackenberg is supposed to be, or at least before the season began, was thought of as a potential number one overall pick this year. Well, his college statistics have been pedestrian at best. And part of it is he's running a pro-style offense. They're not trying to snap through as many possessions as possible. It's not the Chad Morris idea where you're going to try to get to 90 snaps in a game. I mean, they're trying to run three-step, five-step, seven-step drops, and there's a higher complexity to what he's doing, and so it's going to be more difficult than just the grip-and-rip Texas A&M Baylor-type offenses of the world. Is he going to be better off at the professional level down the road? Yes, but there's also a learning curve in which he can get sacked like 8 or 10 times against Temple, and they can lose games. So I think part of that is what's going on with South Carolina as well right now. I mean, they've got three different guys calling plays, but they're also not really running a very big playbook because they're forced to play a true freshman because it gives them their best chance to win. So that's another issue going on right now. 843-652-3776. Steve is on the line. Steve, what do you got for us in sound off?
Hey, guys, listen, I'm kind of, I guess I'm going to be all over the board here.
Yep.
A big Gamecock fan, but very, very critical. And sometimes, you know, when you're that way, you're not a true fan, quotation marks. I just want to say this. It's not anything about the playbook that bothers me. I'm not educated enough football-wise to question Spurrier and, you know, play calling and even to the point Lorenzo Ward. But I just want someone to give me a response that doesn't dance around the subject. What happened in recruiting in the last 5 or 6 years? Because I said it 5 years ago, and average-wise for the past 5 years, yeah, we may, you know, and it just throws up that we've had top 25 classes, this, that, and the other, but the thing is average-wise in the SEC, we have finished 11th in recruiting in our own conference. So while we're, you know, finishing in the top 25 or right outside the top 25, we're still 11th in our own conference. And even the, you know, the mother load of talent that we got, I don't think we had to work real hard to get the Clownies and the Lattimore. I think those guys were coming to South Carolina irregardless of our situation. I don't think we had to recruit those guys. And then last year we had the mass exodus of recruits, even before Spurrier made the 2 to 3 year comment that, you know, I'm not sure how big of an effect that had. I'm sure it had some. But, you know, you keep hearing the same stories of, you know, Clemson out recruiting us or outspending us and recruiting by, you know, upwards of $3 million in recruiting. They're spending over $4 million and we're just spending barely over $1 million in recruiting. You know, and that's the things that really I question when you see where our program was 4 years ago and then you see what is up at Clemson now. And you see the Georgia still recruiting like they always do, Florida. And those guys are always going to recruit. Don't get me wrong. But the thing is we can question play calling and playing the true freshman. But at one point Saturday, we had a walk-on quarterback, a walk-on running back, and two walk-on receivers on the field at the same time. And the score was still 17-10 at the time. So I'll hang up, and I really enjoy your show. But I'll hang up and listen, and you guys take care.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Steve. And, yeah, I am with you a lot of times. When people question X's and O's decisions, Steve, I feel like I'm also a guy that raises my hand and says, you know what, the ball coach knows more about tactical offense than I certainly do. But I found it really jarring to hear a reporter ask him if Missouri knew their plays and him kind of shrug and say, well, yeah, probably. We're running two of them. You know, I found that to be a little jarring. And Steve, you really touched on a point that I've been trying to really come up with answers to on my own. And I listen to Phil Kornblut on Sports Talk on our station all the time from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And he tries to find the answer to it as well. And Phil takes a look at recruiting rankings and he makes fun of stars all the time. And he says that, you know, he doesn't trust star ratings. He doesn't trust Rivals, Scout, 247, et cetera. But if you want to look at the average class between South Carolina and Clemson in the rankings over the last 5 years, it does not belie the difference in talent on the field right now. You could not look at those classes and say that there's going to be a difference on the field, but there definitely is. And you bring up a really good point about Clemson versus South Carolina and the way that they're spending money in their football program. Both of them are paying coaches top dollar. Spurrier is making $4 million. Okay? Dabo's making between $3 and $4 million. They both have expensive staffs. I mean, South Carolina has the highest paid defensive coordinator in the country. I mean, they're paying Will Muschamp money for Hoke plus Whammy. I mean, they're for Lorenzo Ward plus John Hoke, they're paying a lot of money. So it's not as if, you know, they just built that indoor practice facility. It's not as if they're not spending money. But Clemson is spending a lot more in how they recruit. I mean, they've got extra staff. I mean, you hear the quality control term all the time for how people get more than 9 assistants on their payroll, but they've, you know, they're taking a more moneyball approach to how they recruit. I remember reading a piece in TigerNet about that near signing day last year about how they make sure when a coach leaves the state recruiting, he's seeing 4 guys. He's not seeing 1. They've got computer software that makes sure that they're checking up on every legit player that's in an area of the legit player they're going to see. I mean, you hear all kinds of progressive ways that Clemson is recruiting right now. And when you see that report in USA Today that shows that Clemson's amount of money spent on recruiting is near the top of the list and South Carolina's in the middle to the bottom, then maybe it explains why, even though the rivals in 247 rankings are relatively even from the past 5 to 10 years, there's that difference on the field. And it just, you can just look at the field and tell. Like, I mean, I remember going to the North Carolina-South Carolina game in 2013. I was, I don't know, 20 rows up at Williams-Brice Stadium. Great seats. I mean, just terrific seats. And when Jadeveon Clowney, when number 7 walked out on the field, it was like, whoa, that guy's different. That guy is a different species than everybody else in the field. And South Carolina has had players like that over the last 5 years. They don't have one of those anymore. And, you know, you mentioned Lattimore, you mentioned Gilmore. I mean, yeah, there just isn't that level of NFL talent. And is that because they happen to get lucky on a couple of those guys? Like Tommy Bowden leaving allows them to get Stephon Gilmore, and that starts that pipeline to a certain extent? Maybe. Did you get lucky here or there on some of those players? Maybe. But at the end of the day, I think that what JC had to say earlier in the show, that there were some really, I don't want to say unheralded, but there were some guys on that staff that helped build the 11-win program that left, and perhaps they were replaced by guys that are responsible for, what is this year going to be, 3-4 wins? I mean, it's tough to say, you know, well, why do the rivals rankings say that they're a 20th ranked class in the country every year? And then you look on the field and you're like, well, wait a second, that's not real talent. And Steve, to a certain extent, you said, you know, even though they're high in the rankings, they're 11th in the SEC every year in those rankings. Well, that's just kind of going to be reality when you look at what they're up against. I mean, in terms of how the state that they're in, South Carolina's got good football players, no doubt, but Georgia has a lot more. Florida has a lot more. Alabama even has more. Texas has more. So when you're going up against schools in all of those states, you're going to have to, if South Carolina is going to be in the top half of the SEC in recruiting consistently, they're going to have to pull players from Georgia, like in Florida. I mean, they're going to have to go into the Gators and the Bulldogs' backyard and beat them on 4-star and 5-star players. And that's just really hard to do. But you can win more than 3 or 4 games in a season with the 11th best recruiting class in the SEC. I think that is the problem right there, that it's not that they had the 11th best recruiting class in the SEC on average. It's that they probably didn't even have that. That for whatever reason, guys were overrated in the rankings, or were they getting too many troubled guys like Shaq Rowland? Because if you look back, I mean, Shaq Rowland's a big reason why whatever class he was in, 11, 12, had a higher rating. Because he's a 4-star, he's Mr. Football, and then he's not on the South Carolina team anymore. Like, if you were to go back and re-rank all of those classes with departures they've had, Wesley Green, Shaq Rowland, I don't know that the ratings would move a whole lot. I don't know that they would or would not. That's an idea, but I really do buy into the concept that what you do 2 or 3 years in the past has a significant impact on what is going on your football team right now. I mean, every once in a while, there's something like a Jim Harbaugh showing up at Michigan where, like, the difference between Jim Harbaugh and Brady Hoke is probably going to be 5 wins this season, right? Brady Hoke would have had a fringe bowl team and Harbaugh's got a national championship contender, right? I mean, they've given up 14 points their last four games. I think I read on Twitter, somebody tweeted at us this morning, Kyle Burkhart from Coastal Carolina hit us with that stat this morning. I mean, Harbaugh, everywhere he's gone, he's won immediately. But aside from that, and even then, he's drawing on good players that Hoke left behind. But aside from the Chip Kelly or Jim Harbaughs of the world, it's, you know, what you do in large part has to do with what your program's been doing for the last 2 to 3 years. Like, if Chip Kelly were to go to Maryland, it wouldn't matter what kind of steaming pile of you-know-what Randy Edsall left behind. Like, Chip Kelly would be able to get them to a bowl game immediately because he's Chip Kelly. But aside from that, I mean, every other program has to be meticulously built with excellent staffs and great recruiting, or at least consistent recruiting for several years, and then develop those players, and that's what you get. And I think that when they were winning 11 games, they had some bad habits, and it wasn't abundantly clear until they're caught in the mess right now. So that is my take, 843-652-3776. And there is no answer to it aside from, yeah, there's got to be substantial changes to the staff, whether that includes or does not include Spurrier. It's a tough moment for Ray Tanner to be in. He has to show deference to a guy who is a legend at South Carolina, the best coach in the history of the school. He has to allow him to leave with dignity, but at the same time, he can't just say, like, all right, all of you guys can come back and allow them to bury the program for 5 years in the future. There's a giant difference between treating him with respect and putting the program on poor footing for such a long time. Greg hits us up at 1003 the team. Spurrier turned the program into a country club instead of doing his job. Why else do we play so many walk-ons? That's kind of what Steve was just touching on with the walk-ons on the field. It is kind of crazy to look at their recruiting rankings, as we've been talking about, and account for how many walk-ons are on the field. But I don't necessarily think that how often Spurrier plays golf has an impact on what's going on right now. I think that if you're going to delegate, if that's your style, like if you're Steve Spurrier and you're like, okay, I call plays, but I'm not going to be that actively involved in recruiting, you better make sure the people that you hire to do the recruiting are lights out. Like, if you're going to have that delegation style, you got to make sure that those guys are holding up their end of the bargain. Otherwise, that's not going to play out well.
Well, I think Greg was probably meaning it's more of a buddy-buddy kind of friendly atmosphere. Like you said, he was resistant to fire Lorenzo Ward, and he seems to be just playing favorites and wanted to keep everyone on a happy mentality instead of, well, this is a job, you're not doing it, you're fired.
Right. And I tell you, the other thing is, when you have an underperforming staff, like if you have your son on staff and you're doing well, no one's going to come after you. Like, Jim Harbaugh's son is his tight ends coach, Jay Harbaugh. No one's going to throw darts at Jim Harbaugh right now for hiring Jay Harbaugh when they're playing great right now. No one's going to go in on him for that, right? But your nine assistant coaches, your staff of nine in college football, that's very important, the guys that you can pay full-time to coach on the field. And what are the odds that one of your family members is the person that is most qualified for that job? I mean, it's a fair question to ask, right? I mean, a big reason why Clemson has one of the top 10 defenses in the United States right now is in large part because of that same issue. Bob Stoops wanted to have his brother running his defense, and Brent Venables didn't want to go to being a co-defensive coordinator, and he realized where the power struggle was going, and so he looked for a new home, and that home was Clemson. And since then, he's done incredibly well, and Oklahoma's results have been spotty. But I understand that there were some people, I guess some Oklahoma fans, that wanted him out. But either way, regardless of what his tenure was like at Oklahoma, what he's done with the Clemson defense has been phenomenal. 843-652-3776. Eddie is on the line. What do you got for us, Eddie?
Lewis, what's going on, buddy?
Doing all right. Trying to figure out how the Gamecocks got here. It just seems like it was not too long ago when people were five-bombing Dabo and things had been one-sided on the field, and here they are. So what are your two cents, my man?
Lewis, you know, I'm a long-time observer of Clemson football, South Carolina football, and CCU football. And I can tell you, as a long-time observer of Clemson and South Carolina football, what's going on at University of South Carolina, unfortunately for South Carolina people, and they don't want to hear this, but it's business as usual. That's typical South Carolina football. It really is, and I hate to say it.
Well, Eddie, I disagree with that so much. Just because a program has been poorly run for its entirety does not mean that that's the natural state of that football program. I mean, Art Briles at Baylor, right? I mean, I really believe that the staff that you put together and how you coach is more important than what your program has done 30 years in the past. I mean, the fact that Nebraska sells out every game for 50 years and has a bunch of national championships from the 70s and 90s, that's not helping them win games today. So
you're right. But you know, I'll say this for South Carolina fans. They can be 0-10, and they're going to fill Williams Price Stadium every freaking game.
Right. I have plenty of respect for that.
They will be there. And as a loyal South Carolinian, and in my heart, I hope South Carolina loses every game they play. But but when it comes right down to it, I want the Clemson South Carolina football game every year to have national implications.
Correct. I say that all the time about Duke basketball. As a UNC fan, if North Carolina or Duke just goes off the map, that game isn't fun anymore, and both teams suffer. Right. I mean, how many players are South Carolina and Clemson getting because that game is on ESPN on Saturday night? There's 85,000 screaming fans, and both teams have single-digit numbers attached to them. I went to two of those games like that. And I wonder when the next one I'm going to go to is.
I don't know. But unfortunately, I think it's going to be a long time, and I know South Carolina fans hate to hear it, but it is what it is. I hate it for them. Because I've lived through the glory days of Clemson football, and I lived through the Tommy Bowden era, so I can empathize with them.
Yeah.
But with that said, I do wish them all the best. I really, truly, genuinely do, and I know a lot of people are going to think I'm being tongue in cheek, but I'm really not.
No, Eddie, I appreciate the call as always. I go through the same situation that Eddie does when he watches South Carolina football, when I watch Duke basketball, right? I'm a huge UNC basketball fan. That is my favorite thing in sports. Like, if I had to pinpoint what my biggest passion in sports is, it's Tar Heel basketball. 100% it's Tar Heel basketball. And when Duke's on TV, I want them to lose. But at the end of the day, if you told me Duke is going to go 0-35 this year, 0-30, would you like that? I would say no. That wouldn't be interesting. The rivalry is so much of what drives our passion for the teams that we love, and rivalries are fun. And so you want the other team to win a couple of them, to put up a fight so the game can have national relevance. And that Clemson and South Carolina football game has always had passion. In 1998, teams were 3-17. 80,000 people showed up. Has always had passion. But the results in the field for the first time were top 10 caliber to match the top 10 caliber passion. And as I said to Eddie, I just don't know when that game is going to be top 10 caliber again. 843-652-3776. If you have thoughts on the ongoing discussion we've been having about South Carolina's football program, would love to hear from you guys. And I do promise I'll weigh in on Elliott Fry's tweet and Louisville's basketball scandal next segment. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio, 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. I went into today's show wanting to talk about Elliott Fry's tweet, and then I just kind of started musing about what would you say about South Carolina football as to why this problem is going to get fixed, and that ended up being far more interesting to me. So sometimes you got to scrap the playbook and go with what's fun and what's interesting. I shouldn't say fun, but it's interesting discussion.
We don't run two plays here.
No, we have more than just the sweep and the dive up the middle. We've got more than those two. And Elliott Fry, I thought this was interesting yesterday, and we read the tweet out. He basically said he was excited to go to the real Death Valley, as if Clemson were not the real Death Valley, a place where he lost 35-17 last year. And he got a lot of hate from Clemson fans on Twitter. And my thought is, when you've got 100 guys on a football team, you're going to have some dumb moments. And it's a good look for South Carolina that their dumb moment doesn't involve like domestic violence or assault or anything like that. If your dumb moment is your kicker By the way, kickers probably should never talk trash. I'm just saying they probably should stay out of that kind of situation. if your worst look is your kicker trying to take a shot at Clemson on Twitter, then that's fine. I mean, if I were his coach, I would just call him in. I'd be like, Elliot, what are you doing, man? Like can we study when you're not on the field? Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you hoping to gain from this, Elliot? I think I might have that conversation with him, but at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. And when you've got 100 guys on your team and they all have social media accounts, if you sit on them for the entire season, one of them's going to say something dumb. The other thing I wanted to get into, but we didn't really have a whole heck of a lot of time today, Louisville had a book written about their basketball program from the perspective of a madam who said that she was routinely paid money to deliver her girls to have sex with both Louisville players and recruits. And that's just a crazy allegation. Like, that's insane to me. I mean, I don't doubt that that's happened in the history of college sports. But when I look at whether or not something could get you into trouble or whether or not a conspiracy theory is believable, I say how many people would have to be in on something and keep quiet, right? So, like, if you have something that could get you into trouble, you probably want to be the only person that knows about it, right? And the more that number goes from one hand to two hands to more than two hands, like, okay, someone is going to get you into trouble here. Loose lips sink ships, as the phrase goes. And Jaquan Lyle, who's a sophomore at Ohio State, happens to be one of those former Louisville recruits. And he corroborated to the NCAA what the madam said. So you have this salacious book about Louisville basketball saying that Rick Pitino and his staff paid for prostitutes for players and recruits. The recruits thing is insane to me. Because maybe with your players, you can say that there's some kind of loyalty to the university, that they would never turn their back on you like this. But you can't get every recruit. What happens if a kid goes to Kentucky and is like, yep, they tried to give me a prostitute? Right? I mean, it just seems like the dumbest thing that Rick Pitino could ever do. And that's why I didn't really believe it when it came out. Like, oh, they're probably just trying to make book sales. But now you've got a recruit saying that it's true. And he goes to Ohio State. I mean, I don't know what beef he would have against Louisville, but that isn't exactly in the same conference. So that gives it way more credence to me. That's a story to watch. All right, we'll wrap things up with Call of the Day next. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson hanging out with you folks as we do every Monday through Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. Interesting discussion today, really is, because I still get back to the fact that just 6 months ago, people were asking if Spurrier could pass Bear Bryant for all-time SEC wins, how old he would have to be to do that, and just the idea that a guy with 228 college football wins and a national championship could potentially be the author of an 0-8 SEC season. How and why that happens and what the future is going to look like, I think, is a very compelling topic of conversation. And it has turned out to be on the show. I appreciate everybody that called in or tweeted the show or sent us text messages that took part in this discussion, because it's interesting. There's no one right and wrong answer. But if the seeds for a 3 or 4 win season were planted 3 years ago, what's 3 years from now going to look like? I think is an even more terrifying question. If you're a Gamecock fan, or even if you're a Clemson fan and you like the national relevance of this as a college football rivalry. I mean, I'm sure a lot of Clemson fans out there are tired of the five t-shirts and the five bombs and all that stuff that was going on. But I think most of them at the end of the day would prefer that South Carolina does not go 0-8 in the SEC. Now, there are plenty of their SEC schedules left, but from what I've seen in the first few, does not lead me to believe that it's going to be any better than 1-7. I just don't know. I don't think they beat Tennessee. I don't think it's Florida. I mean, other than Vanderbilt, I don't know who it's going to be. I don't think it's Texas A&M. I don't know who it's going to be. All right, let's do Call of the Day.
It's time for the most coveted prize in North America, Sound Off Call of the Day.
All right, JC, elaborating on all of the talented coaches that left South Carolina's staff in terms of assistance from the past few years.
We lost Ellis Johnson. We lost Shane Beamer. We lost Jay Graham. We lost Brad Lawing. Those guys were the heart of our recruiting.
And that's it right there, I think. Like I said, there's no one right or wrong answer, but I think that's probably where you point the biggest finger, is to the staff that South Carolina has assembled. And you guys remember the fun conversation I had with J.C. Sherbert of 247sports.com. Hey, you know, that after the first one got off to a rocky start, when he came on the next day and we had an interview, I wanted to talk to him about South Carolina's signing class, and it turned into a discussion of their coaching staff. And he said this is a subpar staff for the SEC. And he was dead right, man. I mean, he was on this story months and months and months ago. And not surprising considering how closely he follows the program, but that seems to be the issue. And he said that Spurrier, the biggest knock on him is that he's got too good of a heart and doesn't want to fire a bunch of guys. But the time to fire a bunch of those assistant coaches, you know, that was yesterday. So Ray Tanner certainly in a tough spot figuring out how to dig this program out of the ditch. And whether that does or does not include Spurrier after the season's end, couldn't be more interesting. And whether or not the results in the field the last five or six games even matter, that to me is very interesting. All right, Sports Talk, Phil Kornblut, Kevin McCreary coming up next. We will be back here 5 o'clock tomorrow as usual. Folks, have a good one.